We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with two current students and one student at the University of Illinois who just graduated and will be starting grad school here in the fall, all who are involved in Interfaith in Action. Greg Damhorst, tell us about what is that?
Interfaith in Action. We're a student organization at the University of Illinois, so an official registered student organization. We also recently became a student program of the University YMCA.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I imagine that you have. We just this semester came on as a student program there. Essentially what we do is we look to bring together students from different faith backgrounds, including students who don't have any faith at all. And we encourage, I like to say three basic things, community service, social action, and interreligious dialogue.
How long have you been in existence?
I want to say 6 or 7 years. That's not for certain. There's some haziness surrounding the way that our organization started. Actually, some legends and some rumors, even some of which we like to propagate. But it's something like that.
Now, Jenna, Jenna Prochaska is a senior in urban and regional planning. How did you get involved in this organization? How long have you been involved?
I've only been involved, actually, this is my first year. I'm the outreach chair for Interfaith in Action, and I sort of discovered it, stumbled upon it on Quad Day, and it seemed to really fit what I felt was a need on campus. I feel like there's so many different faith-based organizations doing really good work, and I think just kind of an organization like Interfaith that brings us together towards our common goals is really, I feel like it's been really valuable.
And we have a sophomore with us, too, Emily Ensusina. Welcome. And how long have you been involved in Interfaith in Action?
Actually, this is my first year getting involved, too, along with Jenna. It was kind of by chance because I had a friend who had mentioned she was in it, and it sounded really cool, and I'm interested in religion, obviously, since I chose it for my major. And I mentioned it in passing to Alice Foreman, who I didn't know at the time was the president for Interfaith in Action. She got really excited and told me I had to come by on Quad Day and sign up. And so I just kind of accidentally fell into the role of secretary without expecting it.
Now, Greg, you're starting a very difficult program next year in grad school here with getting a medical degree as well as a PhD.
That's right.
What will your specialty be in your PhD? Do you know yet?
Yeah, it'll be in bioengineering.
Background is physics.
My background's physics, so it's a little bit of a field change for me. Uh-huh. I've actually been doing nuclear physics for the past year or so, and now I'm moving into bioengineering, which is a little bit different. But I'll be working with point-of-care diagnostic technologies. So really things that take the sort of technologies that we enjoy here, where there are a lot of resources, and looking to apply them in places where there are limited resources.
Now, you've been, as a physics major, having a pretty heavy load to do. Why were you willing to take on this volunteer work with Interfaith in Action?
You know, it's always a funny story, and it always involves someone that you know ahead of time. I went to high school with a guy. His name was Hamong, and he was the president of this student organization, must be 3 years ago now, making me start to feel like I've been here for a while. But anyway, he and I had been friends in high school, and when I got to the university here, he said, hey, you should check out this interfaith dialogue group that I'm a part of. one thing led to another, and the more that I participated in the activities that we were doing with Interfaith in Action, the more I realized that this was something I was passionate about.
Now, you all are doing a huge project here coming up in a couple of weeks, and I want to leave plenty of time to talk about that and to let listeners hear about it and perhaps volunteer. Tell us just a quick capsule of that, and then I want to get a little bit more background before we go into that in detail.
Of course. This project that you're referring to is something we call the Days of Interfaith Youth Service. We do a big service project by that title every year. This year it's sort of exploded into a community-wide effort to send 1 million meals to Haiti.
Repeat that. 1 million meals to Haiti.
1 million meals.
Just from this campus.
Just from this campus and the surrounding community.
Sure. So how are you going to do it?
How are we going to do it? April 24th and 25th. Everyone and anyone should be there because we need you.
Beware.
Yes. but it'll really be a good time. We'll be in an old Hobby Lobby building up in Champaign, and hundreds of people at a time will be working together in teams in sort of an assembly line process to package meals of rice, soy, vitamins, and dried vegetables.
And all that stuff is supplied.
That's all supplied.
Yeah, you found a way to get all that stuff. It just needs to be packaged.
That's right. It just needs to put into these packages, sealed into these plastic packages, packed in boxes. Those boxes will be picked up by UPS, and will be in Haiti within a matter of days.
Now, this old Hobby Lobby store, it's empty now, so you got plenty of room to work, is at 1916 Glen Park Drive next to County Market. Have you seen the location yet?
I actually haven't. Okay. however...
you know it's big.
Yes, I know it's big. I can't remember the exact square footage, but we actually spent some time wrestling with different facilities. And when we found out that we had the financial support to do 1 million meals... We suddenly realized that the facilities we had been talking about were not big enough.
Yeah,
we're talking about 4 semi-trucks full of product that's going to come in on that weekend and then go out that same weekend.
Now, I know how good University of Illinois students are at organizing, but you also have the help of 2 other organizations. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. The Salvation Army at many different levels, actually. Locally, the Champaign Corps. Is really taken this on and is we kind of see ourselves now at this point as really coordinating the campus efforts to get people out to this event. And the Salvation Army locally has been getting the community behind it as well. The Peoria Divisional Office of the Salvation Army has been helping us. And actually our financial support comes from the Salvation Army World Service Office, which I believe is based in Washington, D.C. So that's one organization. The other is an organization called New Manna Incorporated. They're a Kansas-based nonprofit group, and they do these sorts of projects all over the country.
You have here in the studio, why don't I ask Jenna to describe it, a plastic bag, which is what this food looks like and how it'll be packaged. Jenna, tell us what you're seeing. What is that?
Yeah, this is the package of food that will actually be what they're putting together at this project. And Greg actually could probably give you some details of what it tastes like because they had a taste testing session last night. But what's really great about it is that it's packed with vitamins and important soy products that will provide a lot of really good nutritional
protein
sure. and nutritional benefits for the people that we're giving it to. And let's see. Yeah, it's... Do you want to talk?
It's about what? 8 inches high maybe mm-hmm. and 6 inches wide, something like that, maybe an inch thick.
Yep.
It's plastic. It's clear plastic. So you can see inside the various mixtures of things. And there are instructions on it in a couple languages to tell people who get it what to do with it. And they can add their own spices. They can add their own native... whatever foods is around to it, if they wish, but it's a complete food in itself, right?
Right. All that's needed to prepare it is water, which will be given out with it when they're handed out in Haiti. So it's really just makes sense as an easy nutritional meal that we can put together and give out.
Okay. Let's give the number real quickly where people can, if they want to volunteer. You're asking for people to volunteer in two-hour segments on April 24 and 25. And tell us what the phone number is. Let's see. We had it here.
Pull it up here.
Ah, here we go. 398-0428. That's an area code 217. So this is we're broadcasting from Champaign-Urbana. This will be in Champaign, Illinois, where this takes place. But people can come from wherever to volunteers for those 2 hours. Again, the number 217-398-0428. Or you can go online to usc.salvationarmy.org/Champaign. So you can do this online at usc.salvationarmy.org/Champaign or 217-398-0428 if you'd like to volunteer. Let me take another minute to reintroduce the program. If you've tuned in late to Keeping the Faith this Sunday, we're talking with three students at the University of Illinois who are involved in an organization called Interfaith in Action. And they're doing this huge project trying to provide over 1 million meals to people in Haiti who are still suffering there, of course, from the disaster earlier last month. Let's talk a little bit about what Interfaith in Action has done before this. Who wants to start?
Well, I can talk about kind of what we've been doing this year.
Sure, Jenna, go ahead.
Yeah, Interfaith, like Greg mentioned earlier, we kind of try to focus on doing service projects as well as dialogues with people from different faith backgrounds. So this is obviously our biggest project of the year. We've put a lot of energy into planning for and getting this project going, and it's really starting to pick up now. But last semester was also a very exciting semester. The One Book, One Campus book of this year is Eboo Patel's Acts of Faith, and this book was passed out to all of the incoming freshmen
now,
at
say
U of
that
I.
Name more slowly. Eboo
Patel.
Yes. Yeah. Who is
head of the Interfaith Youth Corps in Chicago and also an alum of University of Illinois. So he, kind of the way that Interfaith Youth Corps works in Chicago, we use similar methods and a similar philosophy for running our programs and our events at Interfaith in Action. So it was really exciting to have that book passed out to all of the incoming freshmen, because right off the bat, before we really began anything this year, we had freshmen who just had this interest in getting involved in our program. They had read the book and were just coming up to Greg and Alice and just anything that said Interfaith, they'd be excited about it and want to know what was going on. So
now, was your group surprised when that book was announced as the one book for the campus, or had you lobbied to get that to happen?
We were actually surprised and extremely thrilled. I got an email maybe about a year ago that said, "Hey, we've chosen this book. Do you guys want to help us with the programming?" And we said, "Yes, please."
Tell us the title again.
Acts of Faith. It's written by Dr. Eboo Patel.
And Eboo is spelled E-B-O-O, Patel, P-A-T-E-L, if you'd like to look for that book. And many listeners are great readers. And what did you think of the book?
I thought it was really great, actually.
Now, Emily, you read it as a sophomore?
Yeah, I did. I got a coupon from Interfaith in Action on Quad Day. And also then we were given a lot of books through the Illini Union to distribute for free even. So it was really interesting to read about what Dr. Patel calls the faith line. He separates the people as religious extremism or religious pluralism. But when he's talking about pluralism, he's not talking about theological pluralism. He's talking about sociological. So it has more to do with cooperation rather than trying to say all religions are the same thing, we're going to the same place. And so he really focuses on the youth in religion, because that's where these religious extremists are coming from. These terrorist factions are getting to them at a young age, and instead of being given examples of religious cooperation.
So they're given messages of hate in many cases.
Right.
Or we're the only ones who are right and everybody else is wrong. And yeah, very scary. Let me give the phone number for people who would like to call here today in our studio. Our engineer, Kyle Crow, will answer the phone and put you in a little line to get on the air with our guest today. And we're eager to have people make comments, ask questions. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If it's a long-distance call, use our toll-free line. That's 1-800-222-9455. And I repeat, we're always happy to have people join the conversation. When Eboo Patel talks about things like religious extremism, religious pluralism, as Emily mentioned, he's not saying all religions are the same. You can practice whatever you want. It doesn't really make any difference. He's saying, stay true to your own faith, what makes sense to you, but try to at least be open to listening to other people, hearing their perspective, working cooperatively with them. And that's what you guys are doing. Now, how many students at the University of Illinois are involved in Interfaith in Action? I know there are hundreds, thousands of student organizations.
Yeah, that's a number we keep trying to put our finger on, actually.
Hard to know.
Because of the way that we organize activities, a lot of the people who we find become a really valuable part of our dialogues and our events are people who are really involved in their own religious tradition.
Okay.
And that makes sense. Because of that, however, we kind of have to work with a small group of people who are really passionate about the idea of interfaith dialogue, and then create programs that's going to welcome anybody and everybody, regardless of how much experience they've had with our group.
So it's hard to know whether to count a student who came to a dialogue and was very involved as a member of your group if you never see him again.
Yes, that's
sure.
True. And we've had events, you know, that range from anywhere from 5 people to 100 people.
Uh-huh.
And the way we look at it is on the coming weekend, the 24th and 25th, we'll have thousands of people, and they're all participating in interfaith activity because for whatever reason is motivating them, they're coming and they're serving people who are in need. And every person that's there will be motivated for a different reason. But because they're doing that together, they're doing interfaith activity.
Greg, you mentioned earlier that it was a high school friend who was older than you who became president of Interfaith in Action here on the University of Illinois campus. His name was Himong?
Yes.
And what religious background did he come from?
He came from an interesting religious background, at least as far as I understand it. One of his parents was Jain, and the other, I believe, was Hindu. So he came from an interfaith family. And the reason that he and I had this foundation for interfaith dialogue was that when we were in high school together, he would come to a couple different programs that we would do through some faith-based organizations I was involved with, where we would do Bible studies or have conversations about life and about faith. He would come to those things, and he would be a really enthusiastic participant in those things. So through that, he you know, was having interfaith dialogue before we even knew we were doing it. And so that's why when I got here, he said, hey, you should come and be a part of this because we've been doing things just like this in the past.
And what is your religious background or your religious present?
Of course, I was raised a Christian and still am.
Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox?
Protestant. I grew up in the Evangelical Covenant Church. It's a small denomination started by Swedish immigrants. I'm not Swedish, but I do go to church with a lot of people who are.
So you see a lot of blondes.
Yeah.
Jenna, what's your religious background? How did that affect your involvement in this program?
My religious background is I grew up in a Lutheran church. I went to a Lutheran high school. faith has always been something that's been really important to me. Coming to University of Illinois was a big shift because I was used to being around people, a lot of people who were just like me. And I feel like I didn't have really that interfaith background growing up. And then coming here and I got involved with a student organization called International Impact that does volunteer trips. It's student-led, student-planned volunteer trips to other countries doing service work. And I met through that program people from all different faith backgrounds. I was living at Newman Hall, which is a Catholic dorm, and I started going to Campus Crusade for Christ, which is a evangelical Christian group. So I feel like right off the bat, I was kind of forced into interfaith dialogue. I realized that my groups of friends all had these different perspectives that they could share. So for me, my first couple years of college, I started sort of reevaluating my own faith, and I've grown a lot stronger in my own Christian faith. And I think through interfaith dialogue, that's really helped me to sort of realize my own Christian faith. And I think that's one of the great things about interfaith is that it doesn't ask you to like step away from your own faith. It really strengthens it through interfaith dialogue.
So coming from that rather narrow pre-college background where you went to a high school with people from your own Lutheran tradition, the diversity that hits you at this campus didn't pull you away from that faith. It enabled you to talk about it in different circumstances, at a Catholic residence hall and in an evangelical Protestant. What do they call Campus Crusade? I guess it's kind of like a parachurch organization. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you, Emily? What's your religious background?
Actually, I'm agnostic, okay. But I grew up in what used to be an interfaith family. On my dad's side of the family, my family is Buddhist, uh-huh. And then on my mom's side of the family, most of my family is Mormon. So they were both kind of loosely raised in those traditions, but then when they got married, they decided that they would just shop around for a church that they liked. So I was raised Lutheran, and actually, after my parents got divorced, my mom became Catholic. So now my mom is Catholic, and I don't really know what my dad practices anymore. But when I was in high school, I started to realize that Christianity wasn't really working for me. But I actually still really loved to go to my Sunday school because my Sunday school teacher, rather than just kind of giving us a Bible verse and then analyzing it, we would have debates about how religion could affect different issues that were in society, like abortion or gay marriage or healthcare. So I really enjoyed seeing how religion affects society, and so that's kind of why I decided to major in religious studies. And when I got on campus, I joined a group called Atheists, Agnostics, and Freethinkers. And that was kind of the first time I had been around other people who weren't ashamed to say that they weren't Christian or some other faith, because usually a lot of times I felt like I couldn't tell people because then they'd assume I was a bad person or something.
So you really felt like you were a minority that might well be persecuted or abused.
And so that was really cool, getting to meet other people who shared my unbelief, I guess. I haven't stayed very involved in that organization, but it kind of opened me up more to talking about religion, and then joining Interfaith in Action also helped with that.
Now let me ask a perhaps unfair question, but since you've publicly said you're an agnostic and you've been part of this group of atheists, agnostics, and free thinkers, mm-hmm. when you joined Interfaith in Action, were you afraid you'd be a target for people who would try to evangelize you, proselytize, try to persuade you to become Catholic, Protestant, Buddhist, whatever?
No, not really. That's not really the point of Interfaith in Action. It's about sharing your beliefs in a non-threatening manner and environment so that you can kind of identify shared values that you may have through your faith, but or even no faith, to kind of learn to cooperate and serve together.
Does it make you uneasy to work on this big project on your Days of Interfaith Youth Service here April 24 and 25, where you're going to be packaging 1 million meals, where since the Salvation Army is involved and they're a very evangelical Christian organization who feel that they need to get the word out about Jesus a lot, to be making packages that say on it, this food is to be given freely because Jesus loves little children. You know, it's actually stamped on the package. Does that make you nervous as an agnostic?
No, it really doesn't. I grew up as a Christian, so I feel comfortable around other Christians. I understand that people may think my views are wrong, but I still have a right to my views, and they have a right to theirs, and I can listen respectfully, but I won't feel pressured.
And in this case, where the Salvation Army is coming up with a lot of the money to actually do this project, you don't object to them having that little stamp on the food that will be sent to Haiti because the food's it's worth it to get there, right?
Yeah, we're all trying to serve a common good.
All right, let me give the phone numbers for people who'd like to volunteer for this project here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, on April 24 and 25. For two-hour volunteer time, to get your time, call 217-398-0428 or go online to usc.salvationarmy.org/champaign for information about 1 million meals for Haiti, co-sponsored by Interfaith in Action here, a student program at the University of Illinois. I'm Steve Shoemaker, an unusual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, we'll be talking with an interesting writer, Helen Frost. We'll be talking with her by phone in Indiana. She's written a book called Crossing Stones that has a lot of interesting ethical issues in it. It's set in World War I. It's for young adults. It's for people 12 and over. Helen Frost has also written many books for younger children and other books for young adults. But this particular one raises some fascinating issues. So I read a review of it in the local paper here a couple weeks back, and I emailed her and told her how much I liked it after I read it, and she graciously said she'd be willing to be on the show next week. That's April 18. So if you have a chance to pick that book up and read it before Helen Frost is our guest next week, that'll be even more fun. But if not, listen anyway. It's about two families who are impacted by the violence of war, a theme which continues, sadly, to be relevant. On April 25th, we'll be talking on Keeping the Faith with students from another organization here at the University of Illinois, La Colectiva, that deals with immigration issues. That's April 25th here on Keeping the Faith. On May 2nd, Reverend Dr. Brett Smith will be our guest talking about his newest book that's out from Princeton Theological Monograph Series called Labor's Millennium: Christianity, the Industrial Education, and the Founding of the University of Illinois. Industrial Education, Christianity, and the Founding of the University of Illinois, a new book by a religious historian, Brett Smith. He's also the pastor and director of the American Baptist Ministry here at the University of Illinois, the University Baptist Church pastor. Labor's Millennium, that'll be on May 2nd. We're about halfway through our program. We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with three students from the University of Illinois, Emily Ansusinha. You say your last name, Emily, please.
Ansusinha.
Ansusinha. I'll get it by the end of the program, maybe. And Jenna Prochaska, who's a senior in urban and regional planning. Emily, I should have mentioned, is a religious studies major and a sophomore. Greg Damhorst has just finished his undergraduate degree. That was in December.
That's right.
Greg, in physics, and will be starting next fall in the MD-PhD program specializing in bioengineering here at the University of Illinois. They all three are involved in Interfaith in Action. Greg, what is your title?
I don't actually have a title.
You don't have a title.
It's okay. A bit of a joke because we actually recently filled out a form where I was to indicate my title, and I just wrote down the guy who's been here for a while and will continue to be, because that program you just mentioned is an 8-year program, so I'll be on this campus for quite a while.
And do you expect in the MD PhD program to really have even 5 minutes to do something else?
I hope so. Mostly because to be on this campus and to be have had this experience over the past 3 years with an organization like Interfaith in Action, it's not something that I would want to pass up.
I have three brothers, and one of them went through the MD PhD program here, and he did find time to sing in a church choir, for heaven's sakes, while he was doing that, so it's possible. But you really have to organize your time well because, of course, it's a difficult program. But then being an undergraduate is tough too, and you've managed to do that, so that's that's admirable. Let me give the phone numbers again for people who might like to call in for a part of the conversation with these students. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. If it's a long-distance call, the toll-free line is 1-800-222-9455. We're always eager for questions from our listeners. And several of you folks who are sitting in the studio today have told me that you before have listened to the program. Have you ever called in, or were you too shy?
I've never called in, but I've considered it.
You thought about it.
And okay. May in the future.
Okay. And what would have helped you call in?
I don't know. I think I might have just been too shy. Okay. But now I can't be because I'm sitting in the studio, so I don't really have a choice.
What about you, Emily?
I have not. I actually don't have a radio that I listen to.
Ah, okay.
I'm in the dorms, and the only radio that we have is in the bathroom.
So I think it was your president who said she listens, but I don't. Has she called, or do you know?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. Well, it's fine to be shy and just to listen, but we're also happy to have people call in. And there is a slight delay when you call in. The engineer will explain to you you need to turn your radio down. That's the first thing to do. And then listen on the telephone to the conversation. And then in a moment or two, I'll push a button and you'll be on the air with our guests. So feel free to ask a question, make a comment. It's best to keep it short, so we might let others do the same, but we've had some good conversations on this show with listeners, so do encourage people to call. Since we're in the second half of the show, let's talk again about the huge project that you're doing April 24 and 25. Greg, how did this get started? Who began it? Who thought it up?
I guess the place that it started was about 2 months ago. I was on the train home to Chicago. I grew up in the suburbs, and my sister picked me up from the train station, and in her car we were heading to my parents' house. My mom gives me a call and says, hey, do you want to go and package some meals for Haiti? And I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but sure, why not? And so together as a family, we went in Elgin, Illinois, where I grew up. We went to an old hardware store. And we were there when Elgin completed 1 million meals. That was on a Sunday evening.
Wow.
And the whole time I was doing it, I was thinking, you know, this would be perfect for our Days of Interfaith Youth Service. Cause like I mentioned, we've done that annually for about 6 or 7 years now. On the box, that these things were going out in, there was a website newmanainc.com. So I looked up the website, and a couple weeks later, when I got back to Champaign, I made some phone calls. Ended up getting the cell phone for the founder of New Mana. His name's Rick McNary. Talked to him, and he was extremely enthusiastic about the idea of doing this on a college campus. Made some more phone calls to a guy by the name of Dane Duvall, who's up in the Chicago Metropolitan Division of the Salvation Army. And my understanding is that he was, for the most part, responsible for organizing the big event in Elgin. So after getting in touch with both Rick and Dane, both of them were extremely encouraging, and we started to do some talking and some planning. Initially, Rick told me that the general rule with New Mana to do one of these events is that the minimum number of meals to be packaged is 20,000. And the requirement to do that is to come up with 30 cents per meal. So we thought, okay, minimum of 20,000, 30 cents per meal, that's $6,000. When you're talking about a student organization, that's a lot of money. However, and actually Alice, our current president.
Her last name?
Alice Foreman, who I believe is out of town right now, otherwise she would be here with us. She confessed last week that she thought at that time that I was crazy, which I guess I'm not too surprised about. But
to come up with
$6,000.
$6,000
in a
few weeks.
As a student organization in a few weeks. And actually, I think I was trying to do it in 1 week because, you know, I was thinking we would need at least a good portion of the money 30 days in advance. So I started making phone calls, started writing letters. Alice helped me, and as did Emily and Jenna, and we set out to raise $6,000 from primarily religious organizations in this community. So over that first week, we talked to people in the university and the community, generated a ton of enthusiasm, and a few checks that totaled somewhere, I think it was about $1,600 that we made or raised for this event. So the 30 days before the event, and actually we had initially planned on doing the event yesterday. The date changed, obviously. But 30 days before that, I called up Rick and I said, look, you know, I don't have $6,000 yet, but I still want to do this. And I think we can still get the money if we get more time. And he said to me, you know, be encouraged. There's some buzz in the Salvation Army that they might want to join you in this project. And I had known that the Salvation Army in the Elgin area had organized that event, and it, from somewhere deep within the Salvation Army came the money to pay for those million meals. So to make a long story short, we continued to move forward with the project, even got to the point where we were, I was meeting with a representative of New Mana who had come to campus to look at the facility that we thought we were going to do this in. And that's the Activities and Recreation Center, which is right here on campus, newly renovated building just in the past couple of years. And the director of that building was working really closely with us to do that and was a huge supporter of the effort.
Is that Tony Clemens?
No, her name's Robin Dieterding.
Oh, okay.
Maybe her title's not director, I'm not sure. But she was a huge support. And in fact, I think I probably frustrated some people with the back and forth of the scheduling with that facility and things. But she was sold out on the effort to send these meals over to Haiti. So that day that we were looking at the facility, there are so many more considerations than I would have ever imagined when it comes to finding a place to do this sort of an operation.
Because you're talking about a huge number of volunteers, right?
Yeah, hundreds of them. And you know, we had an area that was the size of 5 basketball courts. That would have been plenty of room for volunteers.
Yeah.
The problem was bringing in semi-truck after semi-truck full of product and unloading it somewhere. And that facility is right up against Memorial Stadium, so there's not a whole lot of room to put anything.
Right.
So we, you know, we talked about it for a while, and then I got a phone call while we were there in that meeting from a gentleman in the Peoria Division of the Salvation Army. And he essentially said to me that he had spoken with somebody in D.C., and if New Mana said this project was a go, then the Salvation Army would fund it.
Wow.
And so
that's to the extent of how much money?
If we do 1 million meals, $300,000.
$300,000.
Mm-hmm. And that started with a few phone calls a few weeks prior. And then some folks in the Salvation Army made some phone calls to other people, and we kept reassuring them that we had the people, we had the enthusiasm, we thought we had the facility.
But then you had to find a place where semi-trucks could unload all this product that needs to be packaged by the volunteers.
Yeah. So the base,
how did you find a new place?
Well, that's where the Salvation Army first came in, the local corps. And those are people who are really well connected in this community. And one of their long-standing board members had a friend who owned this old Hobby Lobby building. And we actually, I believe, got the facility for free for this weekend.
Wow.
Because this was a friend-to-friend connection. And that facility came through. We said, okay, we're good to do a million meals. The Salvation Army convinced us to bump it back a couple of weeks so we could have more time to get people rallied around it. And here we are talking about a million meals.
And again, for people who would like to volunteer, the number to call to schedule your volunteer two-hour time or perhaps more, maybe you could do 2 hours on April 24 and another two on April 25, bring your whole family. Children can participate or not?
Yeah, really, people of all ages
can
participate in this.
And for people who can't lift heavy things, there are welcoming jobs and other jobs where they can be useful too. Let me give the phone number again, 217-398-0428, to register your volunteer time with A Million Meals for Haiti here in Champaign-Urbana, or go online to usc.salvationarmy.org/champaign, C-H-A-M-P-A-I-G-N. And again, this will take place April 24 and 25. What days of the week is that?
That's a Saturday and a Sunday.
Saturday and a Sunday, and it'll be at the old Hobby Lobby store. The address is 1916 Glen Park Drive in Champaign, next to the county market. Now, Jenna, Emily, have you done anything like this before? Is this totally new?
Can't say that I've packaged a million meals for Haiti before. That's not something that, well, I can cross it off my to-do list now.
But you've done a lot of volunteer service projects.
Right.
I see you're even wearing a T-shirt today that says ASB for Alternative Spring Break, which is service projects.
Yep. Yeah, I actually met Emily on an alternative spring break trip before either one of us were involved in Interfaith in Action. And we've both now led our own or facilitated our own trips. Alternative Spring Break is another Y program that does week-long student-led service trips across the country. So, yeah.
Tell us about your latest one.
The one I just got back from over spring break was to Brooklyn, New York, and we were working with an organization called the Coalition of Concerned Legal Professionals, which they just focus on access to the justice system. We were doing a lot of work with them doing Know Your Law sessions in low-income communities and helping put out their newsletter.
And Emily, where have you been recently on Alternative Spring Break?
I just got back from Nashville, Tennessee, where I was working with United Cerebral Palsy, and we built wheelchair ramps for people who had limited access to their homes.
So let me get this straight. For spring break, when you finally get a break from school and the tough work with classes, instead of going to Pauley Island or Florida or Texas or California or something to have a party, you did what? You went on a service project with how many other students?
There are 13 people on each trip, and I think there's one that is a half trip of 7 people.
And how many different trips might there have been over the spring break from this campus through that program?
I think there were 15 different trips.
And you also do such service projects through Alternative Spring Breaks over the December holidays, fall break, summer vacation?
Yeah, I think they do less trips during the Thanksgiving break and the winter break, but there are trips for all seasons.
So why would you make that choice as a sophomore student at the University of Illinois?
because it's fun. Mm-hmm. You really get to know everyone on your trip really well. And so it's like having a mini family, like, for a full week. And then when you come back, you have these really strong relationships. And you can use those relationships for just friendship purposes, or you can go out and serve together more. I know the people that were on my trip this year, they really, really want to go back to Nashville to build more wheelchair ramps. Wow. So we'll see if that happens, but hopefully it will.
Now, let me just follow up a little bit with you, Emily. People who come from various religious backgrounds, like Muslims, are supposed to, by the rules of the Quran, to reach out with charity and be helpful to other people. And Christians have these teachings about do unto others as you'd like them to do unto you. Jews have these teachings, but you're an agnostic. So where does your impetus for service come from? Why not just kick back and think of yourself?
Well, I don't think that just because I'm agnostic, that means I can be completely inactive in the community, because we're all living in this world, and I think it's kind of part of your duty as a human to give back and to try and make it the best possible world that it can be. And why not? Like, why? It's something to do, and it's fun, and you get to know people. So I'd rather do that than just sit around and do nothing.
Jenna, do you have any response as to why you chose to do an alternative spring break projects? You've done how many now?
I've done three.
Three different trips.
Yep, the first one I went on was with Emily to Rutland, Massachusetts, working with Heifer International. And then over this winter break, I went to Washington, D.C. and worked with the National Coalition for the Homeless, which we slept on the streets for two nights and did this homeless plunge. So I feel like, you know, not only those trips, you have experiences that you would never have otherwise. And I think just going to other parts of the country and serving and really, like, getting down into the work, the daily work that's done. Like, I've been to New York, to Manhattan, and seen the tourist sites, but I'd never, you know, we were living in Harlem and working in Brooklyn and
sure.
and meeting people on the streets. Like, it's just a whole different view of the world, and you really feel connected with people when you do that kind of work.
And three sentences about the Heifer Project.
We were living on a farm, and it was just really, really great to see that kind of, they do sustainable agriculture, and to be able to help with that was really cool.
And the Heifer Project in general is to help people find one animal to start a herd with somewhere, mm-hmm. and be able to have milk and beef and mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's sustainable international development projects
right,
all over the
around
world.
The world. So, mm-hmm. Greg, you've actually volunteered back, was it in Elgin?
Yeah, that's right.
On A Million Meals. Tell us what volunteers will actually do if they show up here April 24 and 25 in Champaign to help with A Million Meals.
Yeah, well, it's actually quite simple. They'll show up, they'll register, they'll be asked to wash their hands, and then they'll be handed an apron, I believe a hairnet, just to keep the food clean, as well as gloves for anyone who's actually going to be touching the food. Then they're put in groups of 12. Actually 12 to 14, depending on the size. And it's an assembly line process to put these meals into packages. It starts with someone holding an empty bag underneath a funnel.
A plastic bag?
A plastic bag. Then four volunteers will in turn dump a cup of rice, a cup of soy, some dried vegetables, and some vitamin powder into the bag. That's handed to the next person, who is weighing it. You know, you'd think you'd get pretty close each time, but when you're doing a million meals, to be, you know, a few tenths of a gram off with each package can mean a lot of rice that you could run out or something like that. So they'll weigh it to make sure it's within the right range, and then pass it on to someone who will push the air out of the bag, seal it shut with a heat sealer. That takes about 10 seconds or so. They'll pass it on to another person who will help to arrange the bags, pack them cleanly in boxes, and then seal up the box.
And how do boxes get moved? These could get heavy, right?
They could, yeah. We put them on carts and cart them away, and then they'll be loaded onto pallets and with a forklift lifted into the semi-trucks that will take them away.
What does this grain look like when it arrives? What's it in?
I believe they're either 45 or 50-pound bags.
Oh.
So they come in pallets full of these large bags, and then the task is to take those large bags and to divide them into these smaller bags that that feed about six people each.
Now, I know college students, particularly young males, like to do physical work sometimes. It's satisfying to them. And so there will be 50-pound bags to throw around if you can get students to help do that, right?
That's right. And if you sign up online, what you'll find is that there are several different options besides what I just described, which is where we need thousands of volunteers. There are some other roles that people can play. We call these the red shirt roles because those that are in those roles will wear red shirts that we've made specifically for this event. And they're doing some of the behind-the-scenes work, some of the coordinating work, some of the leading and teaching and things like that. And that includes opportunities to be lifting 50-pound bags of rice and things like that.
And let's look at the other extreme. I'm 67. I'm well past my prime. I recently had knee surgery. Would there be anything I could do?
Of course, yeah. You can be the one who weighs the bag or the one who dumps the rice in. You know, we can give you a chair and you can sit at the table and you can play a role that's just as important as anyone else.
So you think I could lift one cup of rice maybe?
I would hope so.
Let's give the phone numbers again for people who would like to volunteer for a two-hour period on either April 24 or 25. That's a Saturday or Sunday. 217-398-0428. That's 0428. Or go online to usc.salvationarmy.org/champagne. And this will all occur at Champagne on 1916 Glen Park Drive. That's G-L-E-N-N, Park Drive, Champaign, next to County Market on April 24 and 25. Do you know the hours?
Yeah. Well, of course, you'll sign up for a specific shift when you call in or you go online. But we'll be running the meal packaging itself for 10 hours on Saturday and 5 hours on Sunday. From Saturday, it'll be from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And on Sunday, from 1 p.m. until 6 p.m.
Okay. And you're looking for people from all different faith traditions or none, although because Salvation Army is coming up with the money for this, the packages, as we mentioned earlier, do refer to, well, what is that sentence again? It says, this food is to be given freely because Jesus loves little children. Okay. Let me give the phone numbers here in the studio for people who'd like to ask a question or make a comment. 333-9455. If it's a local call, if it's long distance, including if you're listening on the internet, 1-800-222-9455. And if you've missed part of this program or would like to hear previous programs here on Keeping the Faith, you may go to will.illinois.edu. You'll be given three choices, TV, FM, or AM. Click on AM, and then you'll see Keeping the Faith listed, and you can perhaps put in a keyword, or you can go to this date. This is being broadcast live on the 11th of April. Looking forward to this grand project, A Million Meals for Haiti, on April 24 and April 25. Let's talk a little bit more about Haiti. Why was Haiti chosen?
Even before 2010, Haiti was the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And as we all know, in January, it was hit with a devastating earthquake that killed thousands, left millions homeless. This organization, Numana, that we're partnering with, actually does these projects, but sends them to places all over the world, not just Haiti. It just happens to be that at this time, the greatest need is in Haiti. And so all of the efforts are focused there.
when you were involved in this program in Elgin, were you impressed with the way it was organized?
Yeah, I was. They had, I want to say something like 50 tables of 12 or 13 people each going at any given time. So several hundred people in a room. And actually what I was most impressed with was not only that so many people were there working on these projects and seemed to know what they were doing, but that they all seemed to be having a good time. You know, there's Haitian music playing. There are people walking around, greeting each other, meeting each other. There's a gong that we ring every time 10,000 meals are completed. It's just, it's like a big party. You know, if you come out for this, it won't just be a monotonous project. It'll be a good time.
When this is actually happening, who is organizing it? Who's sort of in charge?
That's a good question. like I said, the Salvation Army came on board with us, and since they've done that, they've handled a lot of the logistics of this event. Which is great because as students, we don't always have the best connections or resources to handle those things.
To get a forklift, for example, or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll be looking to the leaders with the Salvation Army to oversee it all. But the people you see sitting here will be right there, ready to do whatever is needed and to help take leadership if that's what is necessary.
And Numana, the group that's providing the food stuff. They provide the trucks to get it there, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. They do everything to get it to the door and then to get it back. And they actually also send a team of something like 10 or 12 people to come and help to coordinate the event as it's happening.
Okay. Well, let me thank our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We've been talking with Greg Damhorst, who is a recent graduate in physics from the University of Illinois, soon to be an MD, PhD graduate student here, who came up with this idea and brought it to the campus. We've been talking with Jenna Prochaska, who is a senior in urban and regional planning, and with Emily?
And Susina,
a sophomore in religious studies. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, as I mentioned earlier, I'll be talking with Helen Frost, the author of the fascinating book for teenagers and older, Crossing Stones. We'll be interviewing her April 18 by phone. That's a book about two families and how they were impacted by World War I. On April 25th, our guest will be La Colectiva, another student organization at the University of Illinois that deals with immigration issues. On May 2nd, our guest will be Reverend Dr. Brett Smith, the author of Labor's Millennium, Christianity, Industrial Education, and the Founding of the University of Illinois, a new book just out by Princeton Theological Press. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.